This episode is brought to you by Habit Aware. My Keen 2 brings awareness to my trichotillomania by giving my wrist a gentle hug or vibration when I'm doing the scanning behavior. Bring awareness into your life by visiting barbaralally.com/habitaware and use code LALLYLOVE for 10% off.
I'm Angela Hartland, and I'm from Nova Scotia, Canada, and I've had compulsive skin picking since I was a child. It got worse when I was 10 years old, and it progressed to being severe by the time I was 13, 14 years old. And I lived in such shame. So I decided eventually to write a book, Forever Marked, A Dermatillomania Diary, out of my journal entries so that other people could see that they weren't alone. And really, I also wanted to meet of other people who had skin picking disorder, which didn't have a name at the time. Now it's excoriation disorder in the DSM-5. And really, when you go online back in those days, there wasn't any sort of support. There wasn't anybody who came out and said, I have this. And so I went ahead and did it and didn't know what to really expect from that. And after the book came out, I had so many television appearances, newspapers, like across Canada. And it was really shocking. And I ended up getting a documentary, Scars of Shame, and then going on American television to meet with Karen Pickett, which is where I met her.
So in terms of my body focus situation, I didn't start skin picking. Well, I did a little bit in college, but it wasn't anything like what I did as an adult. You know, I had other things that I was dealing with, depression, anxiety, trauma, and things like that. And so I didn't start skin picking until I was an adult, but I did do it, you know, religiously, consistently for probably a couple of decades. I'll say 15 years. And during part of that time, I was an intern at the OCD Center of Los Angeles, which is where I learned about both trichotillomania and compulsive skin picking, as it was called then by the founder of the OCD Center. And so I actually started learning that what I was doing had a name, and I actually started running groups for people with skin picking and hair pulling. And being able to do that, help others, help me, help myself, and I absolutely consider myself in recovery now. I have a completely different relationship with my skin. Not to say that I never pick, but I don't spend hours in the mirror after work every day, which is exactly what I used to do. So I have the lived experience, and I also have the lived experience of recovery as I define it for myself. I make it very clear to people that recovery is whatever they want to say it is for themselves. I don't think that there's a way that people can say this is recovery. Just like these conditions have universal qualities, they also have unique qualities to each person. And I think recovery is a very personal decision. So I do consider myself recovered. And so I have both the experience of living with the condition and also living with recovery.
I would like to hear how you guys met. I know you were on TV, but if you could kind of both kind of go into that detail of meeting each other and how it felt working together.
We first met each other at the OCD Center of LA clinic where Karen was working. And that's when it was aired before the live appearance in the studio audience was recorded. So I did get to meet Karen there briefly, quickly talked about my background, quickly talked about, you know, what does recovery look like. And it's a little bit of what we went into really in my first session with her. So it was still like the day of the studio recording. I was an absolute mess. Because I also had to travel in severe chronic pain. And I later found out that was piriformis syndrome, but at the time it was undiagnosed. I had been waiting years to get a diagnosis and to even get specialists to see. So it was nerve-wracking to be on American television as an East Coast Canadian, but to also be there, like it was, and also I had someone say something to me right before we went on stage that was kind of rude or like out of touch. So I was just like, oh my gosh, I'm gonna be out there in a second right after this was said to me. So it was definitely something else to be sitting there with Karen, but she really helped me out too because she came in when I was panicking because they asked like what my clothing size was and everything. So I told them. And they ended up giving me clothes size too small. And it's like, how am I supposed to get in this? So, and of course, I was just so nervous, in so much pain, had traveled alone from one side of the continent to the next. And it was something for me. It was, I bet Karen, just like she even mentions at the beginning of our book, together, the one that just came out, Embracing Dermatillomania Through Pain and Recovery. She said, like, she when she, that whole experience in the studio audience, that she was like, I don't know what I got myself into. I hope this turns out okay, but if it doesn't, I'll do my best. And I actually, if it's okay, before Karen answers her part, I just want to reflect a little bit on what Karen just contributed right now in this conversation. Because I didn't know a lot of, actually, all I knew is that she had a history, personal experience with skin picking, but she has never in all these years told me what that was. And it's been kind of weird because, like, we're kind of friends. We're kind of like, we had this experience together, but there's still the client practitioner part of it. So I didn't want to poke around too much as I'd love to know. And so navigating that type of relationship has been a little interesting too, because there's different boundaries on that. So just hearing everything that Karen just shared, like from a lived experience, proves just how professional she is, that she didn't want to insert herself. And as much as I had asked if she wanted to include any of that in this book about her personal experiences, and she didn't contribute to that, only to my journey and how to get better from skin picking and begin to recognize your triggers, urges, and whatnot. It really just shows that she's that professional, that she really kept it focused on me during my time and even years later. So thank you for sharing, Karen. And I don't know if you find it also kind of different to balance our, especially because we're speaking about this publicly too, to balance this type of relationship and not interfere too much and become too friendly or any of that. But I mean, I still love Karen. I think she's awesome. Like, just hearing her laugh is, just has this really bountiful laugh that I always enjoy. And she's very compassionate, caring, and it was definitely a good match to be with Karen, and she put up with all the questions I have because I'm just such an analytical brain that I had to keep asking, like, why doesn't this work with this idea or how this is? And so it's like I really got right into the nitty-gritties with her and challenged her, and she was totally up for it. She loved it. She wasn't offended by it. She also, when I mentioned I was going through chronic pain at the time that the book was written to, that she said that she didn't know too much about treating chronic pain. And I really respected that because she didn't take on anything that she wasn't an expertise in.
Thank you for sharing all of that, Angie, and just all the affirmative things that you said. I really take that in. You're an amazing person, and the way that we met was that I was working at the OCD Center of Los Angeles, as I mentioned, and was contacted by Jennifer Rakes, who was the executive director of the then TLC Foundation, which later became the TLC Foundation for BFRBs. And she said, listen, the doctors contacted us. They're going to be doing this segment on skin picking. I'm like, oh my gosh, that's awesome. And they have a young woman from Canada flying in that, has skin picking and she's going to be on the show. Would you like to do it? I'm like, yeah, of course. You just jump at the chance. So, as Angie mentioned, we originally, as part of the background for the TV, for the segment on the doctors, they did come to send a film crew to my office. And so the first time I met Angie, it was at the office, and but it was for background for the doctor's segment, just like they did some separate background with Angie. So when we met, on the show and we talked, and she was having a very rough time before we got on the show, and but you did so beautifully and dealt with certain people so well. And it was just really wonderful to meet Angie and to see her bravery in sharing her story on national TV. And so I had offered, as part of my involvement with this, to provide Angie with 12 sessions of therapy for her skin picking. And so, because we met in such a public way, I appreciate what you said, Angie, about my professionalism and keeping sort of my story out of it. And I do that most of the time, only with clients. But I think that we have such a, it's really cool how we come together, because most of the time, due to confidentiality, I can't talk about my patients. They might talk about me, but I can't talk about them. And so our relationship has been public from the get-go, and that's what allowed us to continue to talk about this subject in detail and to be able to publish this book. So, working with Angie has been a great experience, and just to know somebody who is so active in the skin picking world when there really wasn't much, as she said, for people who were dealing with skin picking. I was, of course, very excited as a sufferer myself. So it's just sort of continued from there. And we're so happy that this book has come out. Angie's put a lot of time and effort into getting this published. And here it is, and here we are.
After you met and then you had the 12 sessions, how long did you work together? Like, how long did those 12 sessions span for?
They were weekly sessions. I think near the end, we had both had to cancel one week because we had other engagements going on. I know I had like the TLC conference and I was moving near the end of the sessions together. And I think Karen had something. So I remember documenting that in the book as well, because the brunt of the book is the actual step-by-step therapy that I got week by week with her. So that technically ended up being like 3 months long, I would say approximately. And by then, when I went to the TLC conference, like my legs were completely clear. Everything was, I think, pretty much I only may have had like a couple spots like on my face and then maybe like one on my body. But I felt like I had really gotten the grasp of recovery for like the first time ever, because I didn't even know how to hold back on urges, because it felt way too overwhelming to do it. And it felt like the anxiety like of that would stay forever. And I learned that that's more of a biological reaction, because technically no emotion can be sustained like indefinitely. We go through ebbs and flows of emotions, of situations, and the urges, they may come back, but the more you're able to challenge them, especially consecutively, the less frequent and the less intense they become.
When you guys first met, that was 2015.
Yeah.
And so this book has been in the works, you said, for 10 years. Is that correct?
Yes.
Our sessions were January through April 2015. And I don't remember when you first brought up the idea of the book, Angie. I don't know if it was during those sessions or towards the end or after, but
Yeah, it was totally at the beginning, because I didn't want to start like recording things and whatnot of things like you may have said personally versus things like for the like of therapeutic material. So I just threw it out there and I was like, oh, you want to? And then if it doesn't work, then I'll just write a blog post about my experience on the doctors and how it didn't work or why it didn't work out or whatever, just if anything, but if it was going to work, I wanted to have something that created documentation of how to get over what I never thought I would be able to learn to manage. And I certainly do have my slip ups now. Like, really, I had about a good year of recovery, and then I had a trauma occur in my life, and my chronic pain worsened. So it became harder and harder to deal with, and then all of a sudden being pregnant, and then the pandemic right after I gave birth. So there was a lot to it, and learning how to manage like hormones, lack of sleep, the fear that everybody was gonna die. So it's been a hard last few years too, because I've also like I've had 8 surgeries in the last 7 years. So it's the reason why I put the book off, but I also think it was a good thing I did, because I could reflect at the end on my relapses and what contributed to them, and that sometimes you just have to give yourself grace for that instead of expecting this like disorder that you've had since you're a child, like so serious, to just like boom, disappear. And I mean, there was actually one point where I thought it did, like a few months after recovery. I was like, yeah, I can keep doing this. I can keep managing these urges, talking myself down from these urges, using certain tools and tricks and barriers, and just combine them all and be able to manage this. But after like 2016, I ended up being so completely broken, and it was just, it's been a difficult road since then. And I found out with 2 surgeries ago, because I had a surgery for thyroid cancer. I've had two of them now, and the last one was 6 months ago, and I got my hip replaced 11 months. A few weeks before the hip replacement surgery, I had to go to an info session with a nurse and physiotherapist about what to expect and what to do, what not to do. And they said, don't shave a few di your legs a few days before your hip, or it was also a knee surgery for other people who were there. Do not shave your leg, because if you have any sort of mark, then we would have to cancel the surgery. Because unlike just normal surgeries, like, they prefer it to not be marked up and whatnot, but for actual replacements, the risks of infection are so high that they have to make sure that your area is pretty much impeccable. And if I had never gotten the treatment from Karen when I did, I would have went through this long, horrible journey of pain to just be at the end of it and have my skin picking hold me back from continuing like my life with my husband and my daughter, and just wanting to be able to be there after wheeling around in my house pretty much for 2 years leading up to my hip replacement with again, my daughter on my lap while I'm wheeling around in the computer chair. So therapy has been so important in just being able to give me my life back, and I never expected that. Because I wouldn't have been able to learn. I have no resources. Anything nearby, like everything that I kind of gauge online is tips and tricks. So I really wanted to document every single thing I learned so I can give that back to people who need to learn the better ways of managing skin picking, and that it can be done, that it can be reversed. I mean, again, I can't speak for anyone who says that it can be rid of, you don't ever pick again. But one thing that Karen had said to me during my therapy is that it's so important to know that it is a normal grooming behavior to pick your skin. So to be pick free would only be like a small percentage of the population, because people find something, they kind of pick it off and don't think about it again. So some of the things that I have to still catch myself doing is almost like monitoring my face, or kind of once in a while. I'm not as much my legs, but it's still more so my face, especially my eyebrows. Well, actually, surprisingly, it hasn't been so bad the last few months, but it's still a struggle that probably could come back if something triggered me on my eyebrows. And so it's like, if I could just like put a mirror away and never look in a mirror again, I think I'd be pretty much fine. But I mean, I might actually like pick up my arms a little bit out of like the anxiety, the subconscious picking, but for kind of the more ritualistic picking and going to the mirror and making it a session, I don't make it a session. It's just maybe like a few I'll find. Like I think I could have maybe like a at most a 5 minute session these days versus 8 hours when I was 19, and by the time I met Karen, I was picking 2 to 3 hours a day. And of course, it for me most of the time it was nighttime, and that probably didn't even count how many times I like just like pick my arm maybe during the day and just didn't even think about it because it didn't even cross my mind. So, or like while I was at school at the time in college, like once in a while I would pick or something. I wouldn't realize it until you could feel the blood on your finger. And then you just kind of have to find a casual way to go to the bathroom without anybody noticing. And I've been doing that, I know, since grade 5 at least. And so, yeah, I don't know if that exactly answered the question because I could just keep going on because it's like, oh, yeah, this reminds me of this and this reminds me of this. And overall, I now have a book with all the tools that I learned so that people can look at it step by step. Although I kind of caution people using my book as something that like can 100% cure them on their journey, because we all have specific journeys, we all have different urges, we all have different triggers, times of day, levels of stimulation, if we're tired, if we're in pain. There's like so many different factors that lead into it. And of course, it's like your living situation, maybe you're a new parent, maybe you're in school and disabled. And that kind of worked to my advantage in getting the treatment with Karen because there were days that I didn't want to get out so messed up. Like I couldn't relax, but it's almost like I didn't even know what relax was anymore. And I knew I had to find that, but without having like the I had a buildup of all these urges that I had wanted to act on, and it just kept increasing and increasing. And there were certain things I could say to talk myself down from those, but that the energy in it actually doesn't come out. And so I had to find other ways to kind of release that energy. And like for some people it might be like more physical activity. And of course, physical activity is good for everybody for a little bit who's capable. And unfortunately, I wasn't really capable of that at the time. And then there's a whole bunch of mindfulness techniques like breathing. There was a breathing technique that Karen taught me. So yeah, it's packed. And like the most important part, I think, for me of my recovery was learning how to identify my cognitive distortions after I went through the logging process to see my patterns. And then I had to challenge what Karen named the permission giving statements, the ones that allow you the permission to actually pick at your skin.
Did you know Habit Aware also offers virtual peer coaching? This one-to-one peer-based program will coach you through shifting mindset, practicing healthy strategies, and creating your personal roadmap to recovery. To work with me, Ellen, or Anila, head over to habitaware.com/coaching today.
I had to figure out what those were because it happens so quickly when you have the disorder that like you can't even identify. It's just like a quick fleeting moment and it's so automatic that you don't even recognize why you're doing it anymore. So being able to log that and stop and think and be like, oh, this is why I'm doing this was like the first step in being able to know what the best ways to combat those urges with are. Like, some people may not need a barrier up against their mirror. They may need like finger cots, like the guitar finger cots on their fingers so that they know what they're about to do. Like, so everyone's going to have their own find what blockers and barriers work for them, what their cognitive distortions are. And so it's not a step-by-step guide. You had these cognitive distortions, this will be the best answer for you type of way. But it's definitely a guide in being able to identify what those triggers and what what really encompasses your BFRB or BFPA, which is body focus process addictions, which Karen can probably talk about more in a little bit. But I think, yeah, there's been just so much to my therapy that I wanted to include so that especially people who don't have the chance to get proper therapy, like still Canada doesn't have a lot of treatment providers. I know like recent graduates and whatnot, psychology programs are starting to become more aware of BFRBs and their treatments, but a lot of times it's lumped together with like OCD treatment, which can't exactly be used. A lot of components are great for it, but the specific things aren't going to address some of the needs, like sensory needs that a lot of people with BFRBs have. So really this book, because skin picking and hair pulling are treated with the same types of methods, it can be really read by anybody who has the BFRB and kind of used as that step-by-step guide to see how to go along each week and what to learn and how to challenge yourself and certain ideas, like certain ideas I had again about emotions, about the urge never going away and why bother trying to get through all these little battles of urges when it all just keeps coming back in the end. So I didn't realize that the urges would really go down and the frequency go down. I really didn't know how to deal with that panic when you can't pick something because it's biologically telling you that it's a harm to you, it's a threat to you. And learning more about the biological components of it was really important for me to understand why I have the reactions to triggers that I do. What is it about this spot that I have to? And it's like, no, if I kind of step back, it's I feel I have to. And so it's about also reframing those cognitive distortions to be able to loosen the grip a little bit so that you can do things like more properly use a fidget toy or implement, again, blockers and barriers, which are so important in at least keeping you one or two or three steps away from engaging in your urge, kind of like recognizing your habit chain as well. Like if I go into the bathroom to pick, I know now that there's a process where I walk in, I turn the light on, stop at the sink, lean in, so I can intervene at any of those times. But learning that type of mindfulness is just absolutely exhausting and super frustrating, and it's not a pretty, really a pretty process in having to deal with that overload of emotions and not being able to get rid of that panicky feeling, but trying to find things to simmer it down, but having the disorder so strong that's just telling you that you have to because it's this, because it's that, because people are because going to think that. And it's so much easier to just give in and have that noise in your head just stop and to even feel relief from it. Because if you have OCD, for example, if you give into and of course Karen can speak better to this, but if you give into something, it doesn't actually make you feel better. It just quells the feeling of panic. Whereas BFRBs, we get physical sensation that's a relief, and that's so much more than like the amount of dopamine that it gives us just from that relief is almost, I guess, addicting, which could be why the BFRB, body focused repetitive behavior terms, is now slowly being replaced with the body focused processing addictions phrasing. But in the book, I do refer to it as body focused repetitive behaviors.
It's so great, Angie, everything that you've shared. So, just a couple things to follow up on what Angie was sharing. So, beautifully said. Just to sort of finish up on the amount of time that it took for the book to come out, I think it was a blessing. And Angie, I want to say, worked very, very, very hard over the years to look for publishers and to then get this book published. She did all that hard work. And I really appreciate it. And I'm glad it came out now, and we both have had time to reflect on changes since we met 10 years ago. And Angie certainly has had a lot of physical struggles. And I, Shelley Delfari and I have coined the body focused process addiction label to address what Angie was talking about at the end there more, is that the behaviors do, for most people, provide some sort of sense of relief or reward, and that is because of the dopamine, and that is a function of an addiction process. So body focused process addictions is really the terminology that I use now. And as we say, body focused process addictions equals BFRBs plus addiction science. And that's really where we're coming from on that. But to get back to the book, I still think all of those things are relevant, because all of the tools in the book that Angie used, and you know, in the book, it really is about Angie's experience. And then I just sort of reflect on and talk about the tools that, and the homework that she's going to be doing, and her progress and her recovery, and what she expresses are her stumbling blocks or challenges ahead, and how I try to help her work with those. But everything in the book is still included from my point of view, in terms of how the BFPA model treats these conditions, because all of these things can be important. You know, I mean, they're tools in a toolbox, and the BFPA toolbox includes everything in Embracing Dermatillomania, this book that Angie and I have just released. So, you know, it's, we're adding on, and that's what's happened from my point of view in the last 10 years, is just continuing to follow the research, and just being very grateful to see how much our community has grown. I've been involved 25 years, and at one point, originally when I was doing groups for people with hair pulling and skin picking, and the TLC Foundation was still being run by Christina Pearson, who is the founder, I actually told her, I said, "Hey, there's nothing here for skin pickers." And I had a group of five women, including myself, down here in Los Angeles, and we were going to start a separate skin picking organization, because the TLC wasn't addressing, they were only addressing trichotillomania. And at that point, Christina and Jen, who was the assistant director, said, "Hey, please, let's join forces." And after that point, they did start introducing resources and recognizing that trichotillomania and skin picking are actually treated in very, you know, in similar ways, again, adjusting for the individual variances as is done in all good treatment. But, you know, it's just been so amazing to see how things have changed over time, this book is really a marker of where we were in best practices at in 2015, and all of these continue to be best practices, plus the new research on behavioral addictions that's coming out. I can't say enough. I know Angie said all these wonderful things about me, and I do accept them, and I appreciate hearing them. And I just want to say that, Angie, you know, you are an amazing person, and to have achieved the recovery you've achieved and gone through all the pain and all the surgeries and all the physical issues that you have, and in addition to traumas and things that you, anxiety, et cetera, what, you know, all the things that you've been dealing with, you're an amazing woman. And this book is beautiful, and really a testament to how much you give and continue to give to this community. So it's my honor to really have gotten this chance to get to know you and work with you.
Oh, that means a lot to me. Thank you. Gosh, that just really means a lot to me, because it has been a lot. And I've wanted the book out earlier, and I felt so guilty about not being able to put it out, because I know a lot of people, I had been kind of hyping it up, and I didn't expect things to crash the way they did after the first year, and how hard it's been just to get by and going to really dark places, and then feeling like I'm never going to get the book done, and not being in the right mental space to finish it for a while until at least I could get the hip replacement. And that's when I was able to to start focusing on it again, to get all the formatting done and making sure all the editing was to what I wanted it to. And I want to give a quick shout out to Laura A. Barton, who's been a really great friend, supporter, and has helped me so much in trying to get the book out there, get me out there as well. So, I mean, the community's been so great to meet so many people, and all from around the world too, who understand, like people like Samantha Wake from the UK, I absolutely adore. And it just having these connections of people who just understand what it's like to walk around trying to hide that you have a disorder. That's actually one of the only mental health disorders that's really hard to physically hide, and having it mistaken and misdiagnosed, and having professionals not understand, being made fun of, being ostracized, maybe not getting the job that you want because you don't have that clean, clear skin. Or you might not have eyelashes, and it may be really pronounced if you have like blonde hair or something, or if you have darker skin and you hypopigment, whereas lighter skin hyperpigments gets lighter. So there's so many different challenges and ways that all come together, and we know that physical health, who didn't know what this was, who acted poorly towards me about my skin picking, or poorly towards me in general, or thinking that my physical pains, which took a long time to diagnose, was all in my head because I had a strange disorder. So I went through some discrimination, and that probably hurt my chances of being really seen for help where I live here in Canada, in Nova Scotia. So it's been a long journey, and it's made me realize those different reasons of firsthand of why skin picking in particular, I mean BFRBs of course, but why skin picking awareness is important, because medical professionals, even police officers and the judicial system, see people with marks on their face or their bodies, and they automatically assume that people are doing drugs like
Yes.
methamphetamine that
Yeah.
can be highly stimulated and give different sensory outputs. And automatically, that may affect if they receive health care or not. It may affect if they go to jail, or if the judicial system just kind of gives you the benefit of the doubt or something. So there's like so many different things, or maybe a custody case. Maybe they see that the mother's has picked out face and whatnot, and may make her do a blood test to determine if she's under the influence. And I know I can't say absolutely for sure, but I do include it in the book that when I was pregnant, I know that I was the only person who was pee tested at the clinic. And I had a really tough pregnancy, so I did pick because I was super sick the entire time, and even a little bit afterwards. So for 8.5 months, like I barely kept food in. It took 17 weeks to keep food in, like at least on a somewhat daily basis, but I was nauseous the entire time and had a disgusting, almost like fungus taste in my mouth. So my pregnancy journey wasn't pleasant either, and it's knowing like I can't really escape either, because even when my scars are healed over, like I went to the ER one time, and I think it may have been like 2016 or 17, because of a fibroid attack I had. They thought that like I had one little, and it was actually a shaving mark, but they saw the other marks around my bikini line, and wanted to test me for gonorrhea. I was like, no, I'm married, and that was the only thing they did for me anyway, and I just went home, and then I found out they lost the test. So having it, and even being in recovery, is kind of like goes back to the title of my first book, Forever Marked: A Dermatillomania Diary, where I understood that the things that I had done to myself were permanent, and that I would have to live with that, even though I gotta tell you, I love having the white marks that I do, even on my legs. Some people still ask questions, and I know there are people in the forums and stuff are like, how do I get rid of this hyperpigmentation? And for me, I don't want to, because it's like, it's what I've went through, it's what I've overcome, and I've went like pretty much 2 decades of skin picking and never thought that I would see clear skin, and I did it. And I certainly could not have done that without Karen, without being on the doctors, and it was at the most perfect time in my life to get it done too, like so that I could eventually get the hip replacement I needed, so that my daughter didn't have to watch me picking in the bathroom for hours or see me and mimic the behavior herself. And so it really has had that positive impact in even being seen, probably with more, with I guess more positivity than if I were to walk around with her and have marks all over my face, the looks that I might get and the way people might treat me. So it's really good to that I had the opportunity to change more aspects of my life that probably I'm not even thinking of off the top of my head right now, but how much the recovery really changed me in things that, like, even my own confidence, because even though I was a skin picking advocate, I never wore shorts outside unless I was at like a secluded part of the beach with my friends. I was totally open with my friends and whatnot, but still had a problem. Like I could go out without makeup, no problem. I'd just like roll out of bed and go to college. But I still had a lot of things I needed to work on. And over the years, like, I've had to also dissect the reasons, like wondering why I have certain ways or things about me. I think that we've all been taught, like, that females need to pluck their eyebrows, and maybe a certain type of pluckings in the way, like, the eyebrows grow in, and all of a sudden then it just kicks into gear the urges that I have to get rid of it, that maybe I could get relief because maybe there'll be a hair with a big black tip on it, which, Barbara, you can probably relate to. I've actually said before to people with BFRBs that eyebrows are almost what brings us together, the tritillomania, dermatillomania. Even though I know some people are just like, say, finger pickers. And I don't say just finger pickers, but just it's that it's different type of picking versus the deliberate too. So yeah, being in recovery has changed how a lot of things could have been. And obviously, it wouldn't have made it really good if I couldn't have stopped picking long enough to get a hip replacement or to prove that I could do it or even get accepted at all in the first place to go to that info session. Like, I had already accepted it, I was okay with it. And I think I was married, just freshly married at that point. So I was married in 2014. So 2015, yeah, I was just like, so I was in a relationship. I didn't feel like I have to like prove my looks to anybody or to try to like win a partner over or anything like that. So and people in my life had accepted it because I came out there, and it's like, it was either, you accept it or you kind of don't and just don't talk to me or whatever, I don't care, but just don't, this is who I am. And I felt like when I came out shortly before my first book was released in at the end of 2009, I felt like I was almost I that I had to force myself out there and put it out there, because I was at an age where, like, adult acne, like, how long could I go with telling people I had acne? I had people, like, in high school, some people noticed that I never wore pants, or I didn't go to any type of swimming pool parties or to the beach, or whenever I was in like changing rooms at the mall trying on clothes, I was so self-conscious about the part at the bottom that shows, like, from your shins down to your feet. And I'd try to like put on new pants by putting the new pants in front of my legs so I could just slowly dip into them. So if anybody saw my marks, I wouldn't have any questions. And I really lived in fear of people finding out. So I had to face that fear so that I could actually go about living my life and people understand that I do something that for some reason I don't understand why or I don't know how to stop. And of course, I heard stupid suggestions like just sit on your hands, or I had a mental health professional tell me that I just needed to grow up, that she had seen other people pick at their skin. They just decided to stop. And I didn't even understand when I was like a young teen, like about the compulsive, like I didn't even know that really. I knew there was OCD, but I mean, mental health wasn't even as talked about as much as it is today, other disorders or even like depression and anxiety, because there was still a lot more like institutionalism of people with mental health issues.
What Angie had mentioned about, the timing of everything, and we were talking about the timing of the book coming out. And to me, everything sort of has things appear at the perfect time in the universe, is how I want to say it. And I think that this book coming out now is such good timing because of what has happened in our community at the disbandment of the TLC Foundation for BFRBs, and just the community coming together in different ways in different pockets, and that this is a wonderful time for individuals to be bringing forth their knowledge and resources, and as we try to, I know all of us, the three of us for sure, plus many others are, sort of rebuilding our community and our power together, put it that way.
I was going to say, I think what is so amazing about the timing, about everything, is that you're showing people that you're a human being. Like, I feel like I've seen some accounts where people are like, I cured somebody in 30 minutes. Here's
Oh.
how. You know what I mean? And then everyone's gut instinct is like, ugh, you're lying. But when you actually show that, like, yes, I do have relapses and here's how I handle them, and I had this much time, like, this to tell someone, oh, here's how you're cured. Do it right now. It's like no one's going to believe you, but you have this trustworthiness because you've lived it and you've had moments where you've been, pick free and in recovery and then relapsing. I just think it's so important to share those pieces. And I think that's really great. And like I said, it builds this like trustworthiness to you that people are going to love this book. They're going to use this. It's going to help them because it actually helped a real person. And I think that's so important.
Thank you. I also
Awesome.
want to just kind of add on to that, that also, if you go back and watch the segment of the doctors that Karen and I were on, I forget which doctor asked her, but they asked, can she be cured of this? And Karen's answer was, I believe she can get significantly better. She never says that she's going to 100% get better. Yes, I can heal you. Yes. And that's what the type of things, unfortunately, with social media is looking for. And that's how the algorithms have played out over the years, that you have to have that more marketing angle to be able to get all the views, to be able to get your story out. And if anything, I mean, I ended up kind of getting a lot of Forever Marked a Dermatillomania Diary books sold over the years, and I kind of wish that it was this book instead, because this is the one with hope. The last one was just trying to come to terms with
Well,
what
just
is
think
this
how much
disorder?
better
This is
this will
what I'm
do.
going through. Yeah, and it feels like it's an uphill battle, but I want people to finally like get the expertise and everything that I got the opportunity to get by being with Karen. So instead of it just being my therapy, I wanted to take everybody step by step and make it sure that it could be their therapy too, if they wanted to work through it week by week, by including the tracking logs, by including the material. And there's like an article that I did not include in the book that Karen gave me, but if you go on the skin picking support website for Embracing Dermatillomania, I left the link there. It was to Russ Harris's article, Embracing Your Demons. And it was about acceptance and commitment therapy, which was the second part of my therapy with Karen. The first was more CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy focused. So it also shows like just how trusted trustworthy care it is in the community as well, instead of the charlatans that you talk about, that is just like, boom, I can just cure you and come to me and I'll give you something that's non-evidence based, and would kind of I'd rather keep doing it on a more trustworthy kind of like the logical, honest basis, even if it means that unfortunately we don't, our book doesn't get out there. But I'm just so glad it finally is, because I've been able to achieve what I've wanted to, and that's to get it. It's been hanging over my head for so long. I've wanted it to be out there. And again, I feel so bad because I feel like people could have gotten it earlier, maybe even gotten help for themselves earlier. If you live in places outside the US that doesn't have the BFRB training, or, because it's like the United States has pretty much, through the beginnings of Christina Pearson, created the models to treat these behaviors. And I don't even know when they're going to officially come to Canada, like as an actual network or community, because right now it's just, we don't really have that much in Canada in terms of support anymore. So it's really, really hard. Like, if other people are in my situation, like I didn't mention, but when my husband and I had looked into adoption before I had gotten pregnant, and at the time I was fully in remission, I wasn't picking at all, and the adoption program in Nova Scotia was pretty much like, you can't have this mental illness, you have to have overcome it already and show proof, like from your psychologist, psychiatrist. And I asked them, I was like, if I was still picking my skin, because they had to know who I was, the mental health advocacy, if I would still qualify to become an adoptive parent. And they said, we don't think so. And it's even things like that. They're like, wow, this, having the information, having the tools out there, I mean, could really like change people's lives in that way as well, whether or not they can even have a family. And so the need to have books and materials out there for people who don't have access, they don't have a carrot in their back pocket. It's kind of, I wanted it out there for them to know that there's at least a resource. And I mean, of course, there's the benefit of being able to talk to Karen and having her, like, oh, not as a coach, certainly don't want to say as a coach, but to be able to talk to and ask questions to. I know my viewpoint in the book is strictly from mine, so it would have been a different experience than somebody else's, but still be able to get that baseline of how to even think critically about your own triggers and urges and maybe some cognitive distortions that you've had.
What has been the most rewarding part of this journey for you both?
If I had to pick the most rewarding, because I've just had so many rewards from it, again, that like we've already talked about, but the most rewarding part of it would be to just feel the freedom of not having that time taken away from me, the energy being triggered as much anymore, since the triggers have gone down in frequency, to have that clear skin and be able to get the medical help I finally needed that I wouldn't have, to have my daughter have me with her instead of in the bathroom or wondering why my face is red, or some of the picking tools that I had, like, why are they in here, and things like that. And overall, like, I'm still here and I'm now able to walk again, and I'm still experiencing pain 11 months later, but kind of like skin picking, my urges aren't perfect. My triggers, I'm not able to always get a step ahead of it. And I think that kind of comes back to the aspect of what you mentioned, Barbara, about me being human, is that it's not like this direct black or white, like I altogether stop picking. I'm All of a sudden, I just like I can't expect to be completely pain-free after all of this. Like, I don't know how good it's gonna get, but I can keep trying on my end to do the physio, just like I can keep trying on my end to to work and to keep myself focused if I start falling off the track of skin picking recovery.
That's really beautiful, Angie. And I guess, for me, if I have to say just one thing, is so many things were coming into my mind when you asked that question, and there's so many. I think it's that, as a therapist, and we were chatting a little bit earlier about this, as a therapist, I strive to be professional. And in being a professional, it means that I don't often talk about my personal life. And that's okay. I've got friends and I've had therapists, and I do that in other ways. And so I think the fact that Angie and I met in a public space has allowed our relationship to be public, which is something, again, that usually doesn't happen for very good reasons between therapists because of confidentiality. But because I, am a therapist and seek to be professional, to have gotten this chance to meet Angie and for to work with an advocate and to have her take the journey public and share it with others, it's sort of that combination of something that I might have wanted to do, but I chose this other path, right? I chose this path as a professional, as a therapist, and things are changing a lot. I mean, I do share more personally, as I did earlier today. It's just like, yeah, that's just where I'm at now with my life. But the ability to see these two, to participate in this wonderful relationship, this the sum of the therapist and the patient, or the client, and to have that all come together in this book and in my, friendship relationship with Angie, it's just been, it's something that doesn't happen very often. I was telling, friends and others, it's like, this is something that doesn't happen because of confidentiality, because, but because Angie and I met in a public way, our relationship is public, and that just doesn't happen most of the time. And so it's such a joy to be able to see both sides of, this recovery story together, and especially with somebody as amazing as both Angie and I are.
And I really appreciate, of course, you giving me the 12 weeks and everything I learned and putting up with my millions of questions. Like, I must have sounded like a toddler. It was like
You're an
it was really
inquisitive,
a joy to be
intelligent
able to
person.
work with.
Thank you.
It was really a joy, and to have you agree to continue our public relationship by writing the book too, just again, it even just adds this new dynamic to the client patient or client professional relationship, and for other people to see and to benefit from and to kind of almost know what they're going into, or at least get an idea of what types of things are effective, to see it from the outside, because people are also scared to go to professionals and tell them what's wrong or how to get help. And this book can hopefully fill in the gaps because it provides both of our perspectives as it was happening. And then, of course, we both have a little conclusion, but it can really fill in those gaps of where healthcare is needed in different parts of the world, or for people who don't have access to it because of finances or whatnot, that it can be truly a resource to go to and find out like what it was I learned during what week and how it was incorporated into my life, and the kind of it, I even document like what a lot of the questions I asked Karen was, because this doesn't sound right if this goes against this. Like, for one contradiction I found kind of funny was the difference between acceptance and commitment therapy and cognitive behavioral therapy, is that acceptance and commitment therapy sees a lot of negative feeling emotions as normal, whereas there could be the argument that CBT views those types of emotions and pathologizes them. So there were certain kind of conversations that we had and that are really important to be able to understand some of the new ideas that were introduced, like riding the wave of an urge to, of course, there's going to be that peak, and I could never really get past that peak because it felt like that peak would never go down. But I was able to do it in also learning how to trust myself and my body and understanding the biological aspects behind it, and that we really see the things on or feel things on our skin as biological threats that we're protecting ourselves, because the threats that we experience now are more internal, whereas back in the caveman days, they were external. We were fighting bears and didn't have proper homes with locks on the door, so it was always a physical fight, and now it's more internal.